Okay, so it's the 25th of March 2019, and we are on the first day of the Digital Innovators Summit, and hopefully enough, we happen to meet with people who actually work into journalism. And this was not a big surprise, but it's a big honor to have people who really do that work since so many years in a so disputed environment. And one of those persons is going to present herself, first of all, before we start the interview.
I'm Robin Fields. I'm the managing editor of ProPublica.
And we start very simple phrase which you gave us. You said ProPublica is some difficult word for your environments because it's coming from Latin background. Is that true?
It's a sort of, let's say, casual, has a casual relationship to actual Latin. I think it's meant to mean something close to for the people. But I think, you know, the main thing to know about us is we're a nonprofit newsroom. We're headquartered in New York, and we do investigative and accountability journalism.
But you're many things which are totally surprising for us. You're a nonprofit, but you're successful. And you're successful maybe because you're a nonprofit. Is that a relationship which is true?
Sometimes we like to say that we are deliberately nonprofit. The business model of journalism and for-profit journalism has been sort of under fire for many years, and there have been a lot of accidental nonprofits. But our basic business model has not changed since we started 11 years ago, and it basically comes down to philanthropy. We ask people to give us money, and God bless them, they do.
The most interesting part, which you said in public, so I'm allowed to repeat it, that you have even made some saving for the rainy days, because for the moment you have a good opportunity to write about things which have to be talked about, but maybe that's going to change. How do you work on this idea of long-term engagement in this field?
We have certainly tried to manage ourselves from a financial standpoint to try to make sure that we're around for the long haul. Partly that's by running a fairly tight ship. But at the same time, we have seen a surge in donations, which on the one hand has enabled us to grow. On the other hand, it's also underlined that people want us to do more journalism. So we feel in some ways an obligation to jump in as aggressively as we can, as we prudently can, and do the things that we're here to do.
But is that a nightmare to be aggressive and prudent at the same time?
Actually, I don't think that that's true. I think the other thing that is important as you grow is to grow in a way where you maintain your culture. And I think that that argues against a kind of headlong, irresponsible level of growth. I think what we want is, you know, to produce more journalism every year, and we have done that. But at the same time, to make sure the quality of that journalism never wanes and is exactly what people expect of us. We expect to be doing the level of journalism that is the absolute best that we can make it. And if we do more, we don't want to do more by sort of not doing as high quality a job.
Most of the stories I've seen, they are published under a CC Creative Commons license. Why don't German or European editors jump on these?
I don't really know the answer to that. I think, for one thing, if they're print publications, it could be the length of the stories, and that one of the requirements under the Creative Commons is that you not change how they've been edited. So, you know, sometimes we, you know, write a story of a length that really a publisher may not have the room for. But I think we're open to that kind of publication. We'd, you know, be as helpful as we could, and we'd love to see it happen.
So that was a call for tender for all European publishers here in the room. But let's have a little look back to the story and history of news agencies. Most of them come from an analog background. They have a whole tradition which doesn't really tackle the field of digital environment and publication and distribution. You have started at a completely different moment. You are born digital, and you are developing yourself in this digital times. What are the major differences and maybe advantages because of that?
Well, I think among the sort of advantages of being born digital, as you say, is that for investigative reporting, there really has never been a better way to present stories. We are in the business of proving the things that we say, and being in a digital environment allows us to lay out evidence, essentially, documents, data, other types of evidence, in some cases audio and video evidence, integrate all of those things. These are crucial tools for us that we didn't have in a newspaper environment or magazine environment. And because essentially there isn't the space limitations that you have in any other kind of media, I think you really can do something comprehensive in a way that you otherwise can't. Now, sometimes that can be overwhelming. Sometimes people, you know, may not like it for this reason or that. But on some level, the kinds of options that you have seem to me to be really perfect for the kinds of work that we want to do. So that's how I see it.
Working on projects like Panama Papers and all the others, nobody was allowed to use WhatsApp or Facebook or all these kind of tools. What do you do to give shelter to your sources and how to prevail to be permanently relevant in this area?
I think some of the things that we use, like Signal, very well known. We've created places for people, Dropbox essentially, for people to give us things anonymously. Ultimately, there's a limit to how much protection we can give sources. If, for example, a story gets caught up in a criminal investigation, there's certainly a limitation. We try to be honest with our sources about what we can and cannot do, and we don't sort of exaggerate our power to keep somebody anonymous if we can't. Again, I think the most important thing, both with readers and with sources, is trust and don't promise things you can't deliver.
This is a personal question. Are you living in a mental exile, or is this exile your refugee camp to be successful in the future? Many German authors immigrated to the US to survive. This happens to you in the US as well. How do you give shelter to those people and how do you help them to survive?
You know something, I see us as being sort of committed to being where we are over the long term and not conceding this idea that we, you know, need to retreat or be in exile. I think that there's still a great portion of the US population that is sort of open and accepting of facts. We want to go out there and find facts and find stuff out. And I think that there's actually a huge portion of our population that wants us to do exactly that.
So the last question will be more difficult. When I prepared myself asking you these kind of questions, I had many other questions in mind. I can't ask them all. So pick out one of those questions which I had in mind by yourself. Make it up and give an answer to this imaginary question which you think that really should have been asked.
That is both a great and a terrible question because you've sent me reeling in my own mind all the questions that I have. I guess, you know, so much of my mind is engaged with the sort of present of ProPublica, each story, each sort of strategic venture that we're doing. And actually, one of the questions that I wonder about is, can ProPublica-like organizations take root and thrive in Europe? And I hope the answer is yes, but I think part of the hurdle that they have had to overcome, in addition to some European countries having not great like libel protections and things like that, and public records laws and things like that, is that the philanthropic world is very different here and isn't necessarily accustomed to the idea that they should support journalism and that journalism needs that support. But I hope that both in the United States and in Europe, that there comes to be an acceptance of that, even as the journalism industry searches for a business model that can succeed in the 21st century.
Robin, at the end of this interview, I have to make a personal comment as well. And nobody has seen us sitting here, but something strange happened. There is a golden rule in my business saying never give the mic to the people who talk. And you are one of the few people who had the right to take the mic in its own hand. And I hope this mic is going to prevail in your hands for a long, long time.
Thank you very much for having me.